You're listening to CJSF at 90.1 FM in Burnaby, where you can engage with us via our website at cjsf.ca or on our social media, which is CJSF Radio on TikTok and Blue Sky, or CJSF Music and CJSF Talk on Instagram.
Talk radio about all things, all genders. This is Intravenous, live on CJSF 90.1 FM, discussing and approaching contemporary gender issues through a feminist lens. Our goal is to educate, engage, and challenge the dominant hegemony.
Good morning and welcome to Intravenous on CJSF 90.1 FM. You're listening to Campus and Community Radio broadcasting from Burnaby on the unceded Coast Salish territories. I'm your host, Nicole Hines, and I hope you are doing well this morning. The sun is shining and the weather is feeling, you know, pretty decent. Before I get into the show today, I just want to share what I got into this past weekend. Last Saturday, I checked out an NSL game for the very first time, and I watched the Vancouver Rise versus the Halifax Tides soccer game. The Northern Super League is Canada's only professional women's soccer league, and it was co-founded by former national team star Diana Matheson, and the league officially kicked off its inaugural season back in April of 2025. So Jessica DeFilippo, who plays forward, actually scored her second goal of the game with just 2 minutes left remaining, and it was so riveting to push Vancouver Rise ahead for a win 2-1 against the Halifax Tides. It was an absolute fun time. It was kind of scary in the beginning because I would say that their opponent came out pretty strong in the first half. Before joining Vancouver Rise FC, Jessica DeFilippo played for the Whitecaps FC League 1 BC in 2024, and also with Spain's Sporting de Huelva, Germany's Turbine Potsdam, and Canada's U17 2018 World Cup, as well as U20 teams. She received a senior national team call-up in 2019 and was nominated for Canada Soccer Young Player of the Year. Now, let's take a listen to the post-match press. I was able to get into that room, which was really, really exciting. And we'll kind of have a listen to Coach Anya Heiner-Mueller and for Jessica DeFilippo, who scored two goals during that game.
Vancouver Rise FC head coach Anya Heiner-Mueller and forward Jessica DeFilippo. We'll start with questions on the floor.
Anya, I guess first off, just start your overall thoughts on the match. A bit of a tale of two halves.
Yeah, I think like how we started second half is how we want to start the game, of course. But also proud of the team that we can come in and push for that goal and those goals, because that's what we did the whole second half. So that has nothing to do with that we don't want it or anything. It's just making sure that we're switched on when we need to. So, yeah, good to see the team stepping up. Really nice.
One of the big changes with this match was switching to the back four. You had been playing with back three for a number of matches. Obviously, there might have not a lot of that had to do with injuries as well. But you brought in some reinforcements. Is this kind of how you wanted to set up, and you were just influenced because of injuries beforehand?
Well, we have been like we need to think about the injuries we're having. So that has made an impact on how we do things. But these are the two ways we've been playing throughout the season and last year as well. And we want to be able to switch pretty quickly. And we felt like the timing was right now. Also with the personnel we have ready for, like winger positions, fullbacks, and these things. So, and not so many center backs. Even Jess was down doing a center back role for some time.
Hey, you need me, I'm there.
Speaking of center back Obasiak has had a lot of games over the past little while in that position with the first team. It started to seem, especially at least in the couple, but especially today, growing in confidence in that role. Can you just talk about her progression, I guess, over the last month?
Are we talking about Myla? I wasn't sure. Yeah, Myla. Yeah, I mean, she's 16. She came up and, well, she's one that every time, she's been training up with us for a while, and it's really good to see that the academy can produce players that are ready to go in as fast as she has been doing that. Every time she steps on the field and in training, she is communicating, she's taking that responsibility. So, yeah, she's a strong out-of-possession player, and it's great to have that opportunity to step in. But it's also, like, credit to the team that we can have all these injuries and still getting new players in and then making sure that we can include them and be part of our style of play.
Lose this game, you're 9 points behind the Tides, win, you're now within three. How important was winning this match, knowing you're in the latter half of the season and that fourth and final playoff spot is just there for the taking?
Yeah, well, huge, but like this, the last game was huge as well, like, and the game before, so we, and I think we've been so close for so many games, so I mean, we've been close for, yeah, for a while, and it's really nice that this time it was us, even though it was late. We've tried the opposite where the opponent is scoring late in the game, so this time it was us. So yeah, this needs to be a turning point for us, so yeah, we're looking forward to the next game already.
Just talk about your goals that you got today. One was an excellent piece of service from Anna, the other one from Latifa. You seem to thrive in positions of strength, whether it's a strong header or one where you can kind of create space for yourself. Both goals coming in from the same side. Can you just kind of talk about what you saw, I guess, in the first one and in the second?
Yeah, I think they're a bit similar. I think our team has been looking to get the ball into the box, like bare minimum, because we know that if the ball is in the box, it creates dangerous opportunities. And I've told them, like, I need to, my job is to be in there, you know. So if you're sending in the ball and I'm not getting there, that's on me. But the service has been great. I think both balls have been excellent. And yeah, it's been a team effort. So I think on both goals, I thank both my teammates, but an overall, my team. And we kept pushing, and I was proud. So, yeah, hopefully we can get more. We can get more players scoring goals, too. And, yeah, that's the plan.
Heading into this match, I believe you had 7 goals in the season, which I believe is the number of goals that you had last season in its entirety. You've now blown past that. If my math is correct, this also puts you at the top of the Golden Boot race right now. Mm-hmm. How's that feel?
Not thinking about it, honestly. I think this team is needing points. I think we're needing wins. I think that's at the forefront of all of our minds. And so, yeah, it's great. But again, it's the team's team goal. So, yeah, we keep pushing. We keep going forward. It wasn't perfect today, but there's a lot of learnings. And I think I was really proud of the team and how they showed up and how we responded. And a lot of people stepping up in different positions and having substitutes that brought energy as well. And I was really proud, especially of some of our young players as well. And just the attitude, the positive attitude of not getting on each other. And yeah, I think there's positives in that. So exciting going forward, but points are necessary.
We talked about that before, about, well, kind of individual accolades, you know, it's always about the collective, mm-hmm. and that you don't get on each other. You're more there to build each other up. Is this game kind of just evident of that mentality?
Yeah, I think the message a little bit today is, like, remember the badge, like the pride and the star that's on our sleeve. Like, there's a reason we got that star, and so we got to remember that confidence that we had last year and to bring it to this year, because we are a great team. But if we don't act like it, then we're going to get stomped on. And I think today we showed up, we put in some tackles, we made create opportunities, and we got to keep doing that.
You asked a lot of questions that I was going to ask. My main question was to ask about the second half and how you felt going into the second half, considering the fact that the first half, your opponents came in pretty hard and pretty rough. So how was your headspace going into the second half?
Who's that? Both of us. Okay. At least from a player standpoint, it was like, we got to focus on goals, whether we lose 4-0 or 1-0. I think like, it's still a loss. So it was all in. We got to go forward. We got to take the risk. The more we attack, the more that they're defending and not attacking us. So I think it was, like, as much as we can, let's go forward and push to get a goal. And then once one came, the next one had to come. And I think there's really important moments in the game where we had to come together and just keep pushing when it got hard. But, hey, we got it done.
Yeah, we did talk about having higher positions in general, even from like the center backs, having full backs up higher. We also switched a little in the middle just to have more offensive position. So that was also part of it. But mind starts with mindset. So, yeah.
Last one for me then. A lot of the time that Rice has been in these positions where you are down a goal, you manage to find the power and the strength to turn around and win the game. Coach's dream to score, for the team to score a last minute winner at times. How are you going to try to use this momentum, this feeling of jubilation that you won this into the next few games?
But, like, I mean, it builds confidence. Of course, we can make those comebacks, but we started strong. We had a big chance from the beginning, even in the first half. And building on top of that momentum, we came out second half. It was just a matter of time for us to get that goal, and we were close. I think we had two crossbar, and I don't know what you call that one, on the corner. But it was there, right? So we felt that. It was just about having enough time to put it in. So, yeah, we have that in the team. I mean, you should see how this team is training throughout this whole period, having focus on what's important right now. It's been a challenging period, and we're not out. Like what Jess says right now, this is one win really, really important, but the next game is right there. So the only thing, and I've been saying that every single time, I'm not worried as long as the team is focused and training hard, and they have been doing that. So that's a team that sticks together.
And Vancouver Rise is back in action on Saturday, August 22nd, where they take on Ottawa Rapid FC in Ontario. Kickoff is at 4 p.m. PST. And I will include a link to Vancouver Rise on the show notes today, just in case you want to get tickets when they are in town. Now, last week, I chatted with Caroline and Leaf with Pace Society about the recent changes that the Vancouver Police Department made to the sex work enforcement guidelines. And it's a really great conversation that I'm just going to share in just a hot second here. PACE Society is a peer-driven organization that provides support, advocacy, and education by, with, and for current and former sex workers in so-called Vancouver. Let's take a listen to our chat.
This is Nicole Hines with CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, BC. And today I'm here with Caroline and Leaf from PACE Society to chat about the recent changes that the Vancouver Police Department made to the sex work enforcement guidelines. For context, in January 2013, the VPD introduced the sex work enforcement guidelines in consultation with at least five community groups. Back then, the VPD recognized that Indigenous women are overrepresented among street-based sex workers, and that the higher population of Indigenous women in the sex trade is likely due to systemic issues resulting from colonization, racism, and the residential school system. However, this time, the VPT chose not to consult with any community groups or even give the opportunity for input when making changes to the sex work enforcement guidelines. So I want to thank you, Caroline and Leaf from PACE Society, for joining me today. How are you both?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for having us on. Leaf and I are super excited to have this conversation and to spread more awareness.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And before we get into the conversation, I mentioned, you know, in the intro that you are both with PACE Society. Would you mind sharing a little bit about the organization that you're with and then maybe some of the services and resources offered?
Yeah, I'm happy to share a bit more about PACE. So PACE has actually been around since 1994. It was started in a one-bedroom apartment in Vancouver by, with, and for sex workers. So sex workers
we've always been quite resilient. We've always kept ourselves safe. And so PACE was started out of the recognition of that and the labor of sex workers. So since then, PACE has grown to an organization in the Downtown East Side that supports sex workers of all genders with advocacy, with counseling, education, numerous pieces. And so when we look to what we're doing now, we've been ramping up our services again after unfortunately temporary closing last year. So we have started again with our occupational health and safety training for sex workers starting once a week. We have one-to-one support offered once a week once again. And we're actually going to be starting up our legal clinics for sex workers again in the fall. So lots of pieces coming back to our community, which was a big priority for us.
Yes, and lots of understanding, empathy, and, you know, and all of that when it comes to this industry. So I really, really appreciate the fact that you're going to be able to shed some great insight into these changes, right? Because, you know, with the new changes made to the sex work and enforcement guideline, do you feel that the VPT is prioritizing the rights, safety, and health of those working in sex work?
Unfortunately, the response that we have to that is no. We don't feel like the VPD is prioritizing the rights, safety, and health of sex workers. There's a lot of pieces to this, but essentially, in the 2013 guidelines, there was a lot more bulk to the guidelines. There, for example, there was legal context about the Bedford versus Canada Supreme Court case. There was information on the current sex work laws in Canada, Bill C-36. There was also important history of sex work in the Downtown East Side, and that was all gutted. And there were key procedures that were also removed. So an example of this is that when sex workers report being victims of crimes, there's no longer procedures in these guidelines for how officers are meant to respond. They also took out information, for example, on... the VPD removed that sex workers are supposed to be treated with dignity and respect. Like these very just like basic prime examples that they've taken away continue to show us that the VPD isn't prioritizing sex work safety and rights. I don't know if Leaf has anything more to add to that, but
no,
I think you summed it up perfectly. Oh, sorry.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. So you had mentioned, you know, something that kind of triggered my next question, which is, you know, based on these changes, do you feel that sex workers are going to feel like confident in reporting violence that they've experienced to VPD?
I can say with certainty that for the majority of sex workers, there already wasn't confidence and safety in reporting to police or any interaction for that matter. But these guidelines, unfortunately, are only further eroding any like opportunities for trust or relationship building. And so, yeah, it definitely makes sex workers feel a lot less safe when it comes to any interaction with police.
Absolutely. I'm curious as to like, what additional barriers for sex workers would you say that this, you know, brings on because of the fact that they've kind of like removed so much this time around?
There's a lot of barriers that are in place right now. So I think something that's really interesting is if you're not within the sex work community and you're coming at this without a lot of context or information, the public will look to big institutions and systems such as policing, government, to find out information about what's going on. And when the VPD takes a stance such as they have, where they're not prioritizing sex worker safety and rights, it only leads to further unsafe working conditions for sex workers, further social stigma. And to like add on to that, when there's social stigma involved, that affects then access to housing, for example, access to like legal aid, healthcare, all these like really key important pieces that workers should have access to. And so when large institutions such as the VPD put out this messaging, it just reinforces this idea that sex workers don't matter, and that just continues to cause further harm. Leif and I were also having a discussion about how, for example, the VPD new set of guidelines alongside with like the city of Vancouver, for example, eliminating one of two sex worker social city planner positions highlights how there's ripple effects to these, to the stigma and these, to stigma. And it's devastating for the community.
No, it's as somebody who's just like delving into this myself for the first time, I feel devastated, right? Like, it is just, I'm curious as to like, do you, like, what are your thoughts as to why they chose not to reach out this time around? Do you have any like ideas as to why this, you know, change happened?
Well, we did find out that, so we were under the impression that no community groups were consulted. We have since found out that one community group was consulted. However, the folks from this organization did state that a lot of their recommendations, unfortunately, weren't included in the report, in the final set of guidelines. I don't know if Leif has anything else to add on to that.
Yeah, I will add on to that, that, I think a few things may have come into play here. I think a huge shift that we're noticing, and many sex workers and sex work serving groups are trying to sound the alarm about this shift in the narrative from systems conflating sex work with human trafficking. Right. And we notice that language in these guidelines. We notice it on their like sex work, I think like resource page on their website. They mention the counter exploitation unit, things like that. And unfortunately that narrative does serve the system of policing and how they want to increase surveillance and essentially like increase their resources, but what it does is it actually doesn't serve groups of either background, and sometimes folks have experience in both groups as well, but essentially it just pushes us further into the shadows, pushes us away from each other, and increases that distrust and lack of safety with police. So I think that, that would be my instinct, is that with the shift to human trafficking as the narrative, as opposed to recognizing sex workers as well, they wouldn't consult with us or want to reflect sex workers' self-identified needs.
No, that was literally going to be the next question that I was going to ask. So I really thank you for that answer, Leif. I am curious, like, what would you like hope to be changed, right? Like, I know that this guideline is in place, but I mean, there's always room for change, right? Like, I don't think that anything is 100% like signed in concrete, that type of thing. You know, what would you hope if there was, you know, the opportunity for some change to happen? What would be more helpful?
I think first and foremost, and this is larger than just municipal policing, but decriminalizing sex work. Until we have full decriminalization and legalization, we don't have safety for sex workers. And unfortunately, current laws don't reflect that in Canada. So one of the reasons like we're trying to speak up at these opportunities where we're noticing these shifts away from sex workers' rights and safety is because we want the larger public to be aware of how current laws actually affect us directly, and especially affect those who are most marginalized in the sex work community. And so, that would be my main point to get across, I guess. I'm not sure if you wanted to add anything to that, Caroline.
I completely agree with what Leif said. I think that full decriminalization is needed. within the sex work community. And we know that it can be done, and we know it can be done well and effectively. There are places in the world, like New Zealand, for example, where sex work is decriminalized. So continuing to do work and look to models that are already in place is really important for us to move forward as a community. And I would hope that one day that the VPD would be more interested in having that kind of open dialogue rather than pushing their narrative. I think, yeah, that's what I have to say.
No, I appreciate that. And I mean, it's platforms like this that we get to share what's going on, as well as like really what is going on, you know, to the general public that doesn't always get the opportunity to hear about this. So again, I want to thank you so much for being here with me. Before I kind of sign off, I do want to go back a bit to Pace Society. I would love for you guys to share, like, if somebody's listening right now and wants to get connected with your organization, how would they find you online?
We would love for folks to get connected with us. And there's lots of ways that you can do that. One is pace-society.org. We also are on social media at Pace Society. We'd love to hear from folks, like whether you're needing support. There are details on our social media about our one-to-one support being offered right now, so we'd encourage folks to check that out. We are also, as we're trying to revamp and restart in a good way, we are welcoming donations, and so that information can also be found on our website. And we're just excited for the opportunity to engage with community, however that looks like. Thank you so much for giving us this opportunity to do that.
Absolutely. And before I let you go for the final time here, is there anything that we might have missed that maybe you want to share?
I have a point, unless you want to go, Caroline.
Oh, no, go for it, Leaf. Go for it.
Yeah, I just really want to drive home, like, the fact that, like, you know, I think it's been brought that, like, maybe a lot of our organizations don't have, like, an ongoing working relationship with police. But what we're really trying to highlight is that, like, guidelines that affect a community should involve, like, a multitude of consultations with those communities. And to not even be notified that the new guidelines were coming out really highlights, I think, like, a lack of respect and, like, thoughtfulness around the sex work community and our needs. So that would be one thing. And I also really want to highlight, like, a lot of the labor being done around, like, this activism is led by our, like, downtown east side community, our Indigenous community, our two-spirit, trans, and gender diverse sex workers, our BIPOC sex workers. So, like, just really want to, like, recognize that labor that goes on behind the scenes that we don't often see in, like, these media releases, for example. And I'd say that would be what I'd add.
Yeah, I second everything that Leaf said. The sex work community, especially within the downtown east side, is so resilient. And when systems like policing, institutions like government don't always have our backs, it's a really beautiful thing that the community and sex work organizations can come together. And it's historically been proven time and time again that we are the ones that have each other's backs, and we continue to do so much work. An example of that is how SWIFA was set up, you know, during FIFA. So SWIFA is sex workers in opposition to FIFA atrocities. So just examples like this, like when the city or policing don't have our backs, like, we will continue to organize and do work. And we hope that, we will just continue to do that work. And we hope that eventually stigma will decrease, that education and awareness will continue to be spread. And yeah, that's what I have to say.
Again, I want to thank you so much for joining me. I am going to include ways to connect with you guys in the show notes. And so I hope that people come and, you know, show support and donations as well if they can.
Thank you so much again.
Thank you so much.
Can you believe, Caroline, I appreciate you for your time. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Hey, do you want to make a real impact in the Black community? Join us where we connect you with Black-led organizations from all around the world. Get ready to get involved. Find the organization.